weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
The Gadget Guide.
And Rob is off doing exciting things with his work colleagues. So we've got just Lawrence here this week. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Julian. Yeah, my company did that earlier in the week.
Oh, what did you do then?
Taxi Monopoly.
Sorry?
Taxi Monopoly. Basically, everyone gets split into teams of five. You get given your own London Black cab and a cabbie, and you get told to go and find clues and take pictures of properties to claim them. And you get given a Polaroid camera, so something that produces instant pictures.
Right.
And you take pictures of things like Oxford Street and Regent Street and... yeah.
Oh, I like that. We could do that in Cambridge with the Cambridge board, couldn't we?
I was seriously thinking about that we could look at adopting that for possibly the next
Where's Flossie Live.
Yes.
Do not pass go.
Anyway, lots of fun and, certainly an enjoyable day.
We saw bits
of London that we hadn't seen before, which was quite fun.
Inside of a prison, perhaps? Or
One of the chance challenges was take a picture in front of a prison of your whole team. Another one in front of a hospital with a doctor or a nurse.
What's the most central? Wandsworth? Or was there one closer in?
I think Holloway.
Holloway, that's
because
a good point.
We started in Camden on the actual lock, and so fairly north-based. Some of the clues were higher based on how far away they started from where you originated. So, you then budgeted time against points. Quite fun.
Gosh.
And, of course, being Polaroid, you only had 20 exposures. So you had to budget your photos
for points
to work out what was going to do you the most justice in terms of, do we go there for 50 points or do we go a little bit further for 100 points or do we try really hard for a 200-pointer?
Yeah. Excellent idea. Okay, then we better get on with the tech news. Yeah. And I guess we're going to start with the rather strange Yahoo announcement.
Yes, Gadget Guide 97 and, yes, Yahoo breach. So this is another breach of passwords and users' information. And this time it's Yahoo. The interesting thing is the breach actually happened a couple of years ago.
And why do we get it now? Is it because they're in the process of being bought or is it just because they've only just found out about the thing?
The stolen data has suddenly been offered for sale on the so-called black market.
So the implication is they weren't aware of it.
It's unsure as to whether,
because if they were aware of it, our American friends are rather litigious, and I can see a few class actions coming up.
Yeah, of course, you've got to remember who else uses Yahoo. I mean, yeah, lots of people around the world use Yahoo. You know, the fact that 500 million accounts were compromised, that's a lot more than just America.
Yeah, I was thinking, for example, a couple of things that sprung to mind. My sister, who popped round at lunchtime today, she has Yahoo email
because
that's via Sky, yes, yep. in her case.
Yep.
And then I thought about my own account. I think I've got a Flickr account.
So do I.
Which I think is relatively recent, actually. I think it's later than 2014. But I think I've got a Yahoo account that is just sitting around not doing anything. I guess a lot of people have those.
I think Yahoo was probably my second ever email account. And I certainly can date that one back at least 16 years. And, yeah, I know I have reset my password enough times to not be concerned about a 2014 loss. But, of course, the suggestion is reset your passwords, go through that whole thing. And one of the analysts' comments I loved was, yeah, you've got to change your memorable pet now because that was one of your security questions.
Go get new.
And you probably want to change that everywhere, including your bank and, anywhere else.
Well, that's the serious side to that, is that some people use the same password for absolutely everything, which is security suicide, I would have thought.
It is that. And it's also not only the passwords were lost, it was all of those vital statistic questions like what was your first street you remember, your first phone number you remember, or your memorable pet or your best friend in the first grade. You know, it's those bits of personal information that build up a fingerprint of you.
And it's interesting because it's all very well people saying, oh, well, no financial details were taken. Well, with all that information, you could possibly get them.
Yeah. You know, if you can blag the bank and say, I'm Julian Clover and my mother's maiden name is this and my favourite pet was Sooty. Yes, he was a cat. And my best friend was John. And the first phone number I remember was 1234567. Maybe you can convince someone to actually give you more information that will make a hack easier into something that has a financial consequence.
So what does somebody do if they have any Yahoo account, for that matter?
Or any Yahoo service.
Yes, of course. Flickr is one.
Or if you use BT or Sky for your email and you use your ISP-provided email that is hosted by Yahoo, the first thing to do is go in and change your password. Okay. And come up with something that is sensible. Don't use your password anywhere else. So, yes, don't recycle passwords. If you use password 123456, which is a bad password, don't use that on Yahoo and on your bank and on your login to YouTube. You know, use different passwords in different places.
And you can get password managers, which I think we've talked about on this show in the past.
We have. Yeah, look back through the Gadget Guide archives. I think we spoke about LastPass and another one. But LastPass is a pretty good one to look up. Free service. It stores your password. You then come up with a passphrase. So you come up with something long like my password, my name is my password, to paraphrase a rather dire cyber hacking film from a good few years ago. But you come up with a phrase or something long and complicated which locks your LastPass account, and then it handles remembering your passwords for sites. And if you use it in full security mode, it creates fairly random strings of characters which are strong passwords. So you can't even work out what your password is half the time.
Yeah, no, I can't. I use a similar service, and I just have to use that similar service because my password's now just so completely incomprehensible that nobody'd ever be able to remember them.
If it's #0OP lowercase a tilde, and you've got to then work out how to type that, it's not a simple password anymore. Anyway, moving on from passwords and breaches, the thought is also on other things. I know Neil mentioned it this morning on breakfast, but if you Google "Have I been pawned?" PWNED, you can then search whether you have had your email compromised in this hack, LinkedIn, Adobe, several others. So there have been a fair few. So reset your passwords frequently. Yeah, worth doing. Other tech news: Amazon recently launched the Amazon Echo in the UK. And this is Amazon's answer to Siri or Google Now.
But it's slightly different, though, isn't it?
It's very
different. It's standalone.
Yeah. So this is a little device, looks like a Pringles tube on steroids.
Yes.
Has a speaker built into it if you go for the full-blown Echo product. And you put it in a corner of the room, and you can then say to it, and it's called Alexa. So you say, Alexa, what's on my schedule for today? And it will then verbalize your calendar back to you. Or you can say, Alexa, play me Coldplay. And it will then play from Amazon Music Coldplay. Or you can say to it, Alexa, order more Fairy Liquid. And it will order from Amazon Pantry some Fairy Liquid into your next pantry box. So smart stuff like that. Now, if you've got speakers in every room, like a Sonos system or other multi-room system, you might want to then go for the Amazon Echo Dot, which is the same device without a speaker in it. So it enables your room to become smart. And it works in a room. So if you have a larger house, you then start to want to have multiple echoes or echo dots around the place. So, launched. I think you're waiting for yours. I'm sort of on the fence.
I ordered the dot because I already have means to use a speaker.
I'm probably going to order the dot. It's out in about a month's time.
And it's a Cambridge product, of course, we should remember too, which is rather nice, which was acquired by Amazon. I think Eevee, I think, was its original name.
Yep. A couple other things this week. The BBC are showing off prototypes of holographic television.
Yes.
Help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. That is interesting stuff coming from the BBC. And GoPro, everyone's favourite action cam. There are others, but they're not generally worth mentioning, have just launched a drone.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, what's interesting is, of course, drone manufacturers have been generally coming up with ways where you just strap your GoPro to them for quite a few years now, and have then been building their own cameras into them. So things like the DJI Phantoms and so on have their own cameras or mounts to mount GoPros. GoPro have launched a drone called the Karma, which ships for £720 without a camera, which is quite interesting. So you've still got to buy a GoPro, but they're figuring a lot of people who've got GoPros already will want the drone. What you get for that is you get a drone as well as a controller with first-person point-of-view video, so it feeds the video back to your controller. But you also get their new GoPro Karma stabilized stick, the Karma Grip, which allows you to handhold your GoPro and create nice steady cam type footage, which has always been the problem with these action cams, is your footage is jerky and all over the place if you're actually doing some activity or just walking around with your camera. So quite an interesting stabilizing kit. That alone is worth £250. So the drone is around £500 as part of that kit. Shipping in a couple of weeks' time. All the details on GoPro's website, and that is UK shipping. So, interesting stuff. Last thing before we go to a break, the rumour mills have started, and it looks like Twitter might be up for sale, and there's thoughts it could be Google buying them.
That would be interesting.
It would be very interesting.
Because Google bought WhatsApp not that long ago.
No,
not Google, Facebook bought Facebook. WhatsApp is what I meant to say, sorry.
Yeah, no, so interesting. There's thoughts of Google or Salesforce. Now, Salesforce is not really a consumer brand. It's a business type of brand. Salesforce do a lot of customer relationship marketing tools for businesses to keep track of their customers, and they're touted as potentially one of the suitors of Twitter, but Google could be an interesting one.
It could be very interesting. Lawrence, thank you very much. We'll come back. What are we going to be talking about after the travel?
We're going to talk about smartphones on a budget. So smartphones for under £200. I thought, you know, we've talked about all the high-end stuff from all the manufacturers that produce top-notch smartphones, but, you know, what can the man on the street buy for less than £200?
The Gadget Guide.
Phones under £200 then, Lawrence.
So, of course, this does rule out Apple.
You're not be getting
pretty
an iPhone
much entirely,
with this.
Yeah.
Android?
Pretty much universally Android. A smattering of Windows Mobile, surprisingly.
Okay.
Windows Mobile is still a thing, even though Microsoft are trying to kill it off as fast as they can. And so are Nokia/Lumia. Depends on who owns who at the moment. But you can still pick up Lumia phones running Windows Mobile 10 for under £200.
Interesting.
And they're respectable phones, and Windows Mobile is actually not bad as an operating system on a phone. And if you have a decent amount of Windows hardware, things like a laptop or things like a Microsoft Surface, their tablet offering, a Windows Mobile phone actually fits in quite nicely, because your Cortana, your digital assistant in the Windows world, works quite seamlessly across all of them.
Cortana, sorry, digital assistant. So that would
be... This is the Siri equivalent.
Okay, so that's when you speak in and it does something nice for you.
Yeah, you say, Cortana, do something for
me.
You know?
That's fine.
Remind me to bug Julian about whatever on this date, and it will then remind you and so on.
You don't normally need reminding, Lawrence, but...
So, yes, you can pick up the Lumia 650 for under £200 still. But looking through the Android list, and like I said, predominantly Android is in this bracket, you've got all the big names there. You've still got the HTCs, the Sonys, the Samsungs, and then you've got a bunch of interesting Chinese brands that have started coming up with products that are actually not bad products. And when you consider most of the big name brands are made in China anyway, what's the difference if it says HTC on this one and this one says Xiaomi, spelled X-I-A-O-M-E.
And is there still such a thing as an independent phone operating system which a manufacturer puts in itself? Or is everybody taking one of the big systems you mentioned there?
So with Android, it's quite interesting, because Android, and this is one of its weaknesses as well as one of its strengths, is Google publish a reference set of Android and say, this is Android, and this is what we will install on products that we brand as right now Nexus, but looks like they might be changing the branding to Pixel. But the Nexus range that Google have been producing for a good few years, since pretty much since they bought Android and started off with the first product, which I think was a T-Mobile US product, horrible little white thing. When they came up with the Nexus range, they said these ones will be pure Android, undiluted, not messed with by the manufacturer or the network. So it will be the native experience. Because they said, here's Android to all the manufacturers, a lot of the manufacturers have added their own skin. And this is the customization of the operating system to make it fit with their hardware.
Mm.
Maybe to add features that are specific to their hardware.
Because they still want to sell the things. I guess if all the phones were the same, then there would be...
There's no reason to buy...
It would be a rush to the bottom almost, wouldn't there?
Yeah, no reason to buy one or the other. So things like Samsung on the Galaxy range, they were the first ones with a fingerprint reader integrated into Android. They came up with the software, added it to Android. Interestingly, they provided it back to Google, who then incorporated into the next version of Android. So natively, then Android phones going forward will have fingerprint recognition with software provided by Samsung. So if you're an LG manufacturer and you add a fingerprint reader, yeah, there's a bit of Samsung software in there as well. But, you know, everyone at least cooperates in that world. And there might be a small amount of licensing fees, but it's not horrific. You know, it's cheaper than the effective, in quotes, Microsoft tax on file operating systems and so on, which were a bit of a bane for manufacturers of non-Microsoft operating systems for a good while. So you can get, like I said, respectable phones, and you can get 5-inch, 5.5-inch screens, top spec cameras, decent amount of storage in these devices, you know, unlocked, SIM-free for under £200. So just looking through everyone's favourite online emporium of stuff, Amazon, of
others are available.
If you go into somewhere. Google and you search for smartphones under £200, it actually provides you with quite a good list, and it will show you what Currys are selling, what Coffin Warehouse are selling, what Vodafone themselves are selling, branded as a Vodafone phone for about £60.
It's interesting. I guess one of the advantages of doing this, you can go on pay as you go and pay monthly and just flip from operator to operator.
Precisely. Now, a lot of these, well, generally they're all 3G. Quite a lot of them have got 4G capabilities
as
well.
Really?
So
okay.
you don't have to think, well, I'm going to do myself out of having 4G. No, a lot of these have got 4G. Motorola have got some. OnePlus, who've been an interesting one as far as levelling the playing ground on pricing. And when they came out with their first OnePlus One, their pricing was so low, everyone thought that they were going to be rubbish, but they're actually pretty good phones. Now, their version of Android is Cyanogen, and that's another fork of Android. So it's been slightly altered. It's got a different interface. All your apps still work the same, but it is modified. And they've added interesting security features. So they've added natively automatic looking up of who's calling you. So instead of just a random 0203 number appearing on your phone, it will do a very quick lookup across the internet and come back and go, this is XYZ company calling you.
That's very helpful, because presumably something like that can alert you to if it's somebody selling you PPI who you've spoken to a dozen times already.
And you can hit, more importantly, the block button, and then your phone will never ring from that number with that number again.
I like that. So, that's a good plan.
Features like that are good additions. So quickly running through some of the ones that I've picked up, which are great to look at. The OnePlus X at £189. Look at oneplus.net for the details on that. Wiley Fox as a range, quite a new manufacturer to the party. Wileyfox.com. The one that all the reviews are recommending is not the top of the range Storm at £199. Everyone's saying, look at the Swift at £119. Yes, it's only got a 13 megapixel camera instead of a 20 megapixel, but they're saying the photos out of the 13 megapixel are better than the ones out of the 20 megapixel. So, you know, you're still getting a top notch camera. You're getting a decent amount of storage. The other thing is some of the ones in the Wiley Fox range, the Spark, has a removable battery, which is becoming a rare thing in smartphones. So, you know, £89 buys you the Spark, and you can buy spare batteries for it, which is great, especially for people on the go. £15 for a spare battery is not bad these days in smartphone terms. So Wiley Fox is an interesting one. And then I cheated slightly. I went, what do you get just over the £200 bracket? And there's a brand that hasn't quite made it to the UK yet called Nextbit, and they're Robin phone. Now, you can pick it up on eBay for £220. It's selling for $300 at the moment in the US. Interesting thing about the Nextbit Robin is it's 32-gig phone, but what it does is it manages your apps on your phone, and it says, well, you haven't run something like Just Eat or Uber for a while on your phone, so what we'll do is we'll delete it off your phone, but we'll store it in the cloud. Next time you click to run Uber, it'll automatically download it and run it.
Oh, now that's very clever.
Which is very clever.
Very clever
stuff.
Indeed.
So their unique selling point is it doesn't matter that you've only got 32 gigs. Yes, you can add an SD card and you can add up to 128 gig SD cards to these things, but that's for your photos and music and videos. If you're not using the app all the time, why store it all the time? So interesting stuff to look at. And it'd be interesting to see whether that sort of technology makes it into things like Android as a whole, and maybe into other manufacturers.
That's very good. Lawrence, so we're out of time. But thank you very much, as always. See you again in a couple of weeks.
14th of October, I've got down on the diary.
That's probably it then.